Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome, good morning. Well, winter's come back with a vengeance. It was -1 in Joburg this morning, so please dress warm. Don't take a chance. And they say by the weekend it should come back to normal again. Now, in the studio this morning, I have a very, very special guest. His name is Chad Shapiro. He's from Atlanta in the USA. He'll give us his background in a few moments and why I'm interviewing him as well. But I also want to mention that you know we're in the month of what they call the Women's Month. And last Wednesday we had the Women's Day. And possibly a little later on, I'm going to mention some of the very important Jewish women who made a change in the world. For example, Golda Meir, the first Jewish prime minister in Israel. And remember what Ben Gurion said, she's the only man in his cabinet. Right, so Chad, good morning, welcome, it's a pleasure having you.
Good morning, thank you so much for having me on.
It's a pleasure. Now, just give us a background, where you were born, where you're educated, and where you are now in the United States and what you're doing.
Absolutely. Okay, so thank you so much again. I was actually born here in South Africa, in Park Lane Clinic in Johannesburg. And then my family, we all lived in Pretoria, after which we moved to Atlanta, Georgia when I was 4 years old. So I've spent the majority of my life in the States. And I attended Jewish day school all the way through high school. And then I attended Yeshivat Eretz HaTzvi in Jerusalem for a year and a half. And then I moved on to Yeshiva University, and that's where I'm currently studying right now.
Can you just tell us the name of your parents, their first name?
Sure, Anthony and Tracy Shapiro.
In case some of our listeners may remember them.
Yes.
And you said they were from Pretoria. Right. Now, you're at the Yeshiva University in the United States.
That's right.
And tell me what you're studying there and why you've come to South Africa and in which way can I help you?
Absolutely. So I'm currently studying political science and English literature at Yeshiva University. And thank God I've received myself and my research partner, Joshua Blicker, who unfortunately couldn't make the trip. He's back home in Vancouver, Canada. We are currently researching the mechanisms and the strategies used by various Jewish organizations during and before the civil rights movement in Atlantic Georgia and during apartheid in South Africa in Johannesburg.
Right.
Yes.
And have you done any research at all? Have you done any reading at all about apartheid? I mean,
absolutely. So
absolutely.
That's
so
what sparked my interest in the very beginning. I was having conversations with my parents and with my professors in school. And the Jewish connection and both my South African connection sort of came together quite nicely and sort of fit the mold for this nice research project that we're doing now. So.
Right. Have you read a book by Professor Gideon Shimoni? It's called The South African Jewish Experience.
So I have not yet read the book. Of course I've heard of Professor Shimoni and I've actually sent him an email recently, but it's next on my reading list for sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right. So now, Chad, I'm going to assist you because I have some archives at home on apartheid, the Jews who were involved. I'm not going to get involved in the institutions like the Jewish Board of Deputies because apparently you do have an arrangement to meet with them and they'll give you all their details. There's David Sachs and there's Naomi Musica at the archives, the Rochlin archives. They'll be able to help you there. But when it comes to individuals, then I'll be able to give you quite a lot of information. For example, we had here Rabbi Norman Bernard, who passed away about 2 years ago, and I've got all his material on when he used to go into the pulpit and speak against, you know, the apartheid regime. And as a matter of fact, on quite a few occasions, they were going to deport him. Then also I've got records of the late Chief Rabbi of South Africa, Dr. Louis Rabinowitz, where he spoke openly against the apartheid. There was a Prime Minister I called Verwoerd, Hendrik Verwoerd, and they thought they were going to deport Louis Rabinowitz, but there's no way they could ever do that. He actually challenged them from the pulpit try and come and deport me or arrest me. They were petrified of him. And that's for another time, because he was a very, very commanding, a most dynamic rabbi, outspoken. And then we have another rabbi, and I'm going to ask you on Tuesday morning to come into the studio again. His name is Rabbi Benny Isaacson. Now, I'm interviewing him on Tuesday morning because he's just published his book, and I'd like you to be in there and speak to him as well, there, because he was very, very anti-government. He was very involved with the ANC. He'll be able to give you a lot of information as well. So that's for Tuesday morning. Just let our listeners know I'll be interviewing Rabbi Benny Isaacson. And then we had quite a few other rabbis. Now, recently, I helped a gentleman in Germany by the name of Hannah Plass with a lot of information. I actually gave him recordings of speeches, etc., on the anti-apartheid movement, the Jews that were involved. I've actually emailed him for you and asked him to send you his dissertation on the anti-apartheid, the Jews who took the fight. So there's a lot of information out there, and there's a lot of information that people don't know about. Now, when I mentioned a few moments ago, this is also the month, Women's Month, you know, throughout the South Africa, and we had this Women's Day last week. It was a public holiday. There was Helen Suzman. I'm sure you've heard of her.
Yes.
She was very, very involved. She was alone person representing a party all by herself, the Progressive Party in Parliament, where she stood up against the Prime Minister then was P.W. Botha and others. There were others as well who went to prison, a Jewish woman. For example, there was Violet and Sheila Weinberg. It was a mother and a daughter. They were both incarcerated in the same prison, yet they never knew they were there. The mother didn't know the daughter was there, and the daughter didn't know the mother was there. It was in Barberton. That details I'll go into maybe a little bit later on. There was another famous Jewish woman called Basel. I'll come to her in a moment. And also Helen Joseph, I'm sure you heard of her. And Ruth First, she was the wife of Joe Slova. Right, Esther Basel was the name of the other lady. So there was a lot of Jewish women involved. And then, of course, we had a lady called Nettie Davido, who was the president of the Women's Zionist Council of South Africa, but she was also a member of what they call the Black Sash. I don't know if you heard of the Black Sash. They used to demonstrate outside Wits University or wherever it was against the apartheid. And there were a lot of Jewish women who marched in 1900 and I think it was 56 when the woman went to Pretoria to object to the woman getting what they call to carry a pass, where Helen Nagoya was one of the leaders and Helen Joseph was there, etc. So just to go back now to your studies, yes. How are you going to now relate it to the civil rights movement?
That's a great question. So obviously the situations both in South Africa and in the United States are a little bit different, specifically with the government legislation both in the 50s and 60s already trying to promote integration in the United States, and obviously that was not the case in South Africa. So what makes it a little bit interesting and what sort of warrants this comparison is the way integration was dealt with specifically in the United States South, where you had the sort of the neighborhood wanting to keep this segregation the way it was for the most part. And this sort of put a lot of pressure on the Jewish community to sort of conform to those southern needs and wants. So that's what sort of warrants this pretty specific comparison between South Africa and the United States South.
Yeah. So. But did a lot of Jews participate in the civil rights movement?
Yes. So believe it or not, there was quite a lot of participation with the Jewish community, and there was a lot. There's a whole history of confrontations and dialogues between prominent Southern Jews and Southern blacks as well. Obviously, Martin Luther King Jr. and a lot of different Rebbeim mostly Reform rabbis in the South had pretty good relationships. So there definitely was that relationship with the Jews in the South as well. So.
Right. And do you remember in Chicago you had that Skokie? Are you aware? Remember there was that uprising in Chicago?
Yes.
Skokie?
Yes, yes,
right.
Yes.
We're going to take an ad break. We're going to be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So if you just tuned in, I'm talking to Chad Shapiro, originally from Johannesburg, living in Atlanta, USA, and studying at the Yeshiva University. And, of course, he's speaking all about the anti-apartheid movement, the institutions that were involved or against or supported it, Jewish institutions I'm talking about, and individuals as well. But just to remind you before we continue that Shabbat comes in this evening at 5:31 p.m., Motzei Shabbat is at 6:22, the Parsha is Ra'eh, and tomorrow is Shabbat Mevorachim, where we bench Rosh Chodesh, and on Tuesday and Wednesday is going to be Rosh Chodesh Elul, and of course that means it's exactly 5 weeks to Rosh Hashanah. And just a reminder, we have the Art of a Cantor on Sunday between 4 and 5, and I'm going to play Chazonim that have never ever been played on the Art of the Cantor program before, except for two, that will be Shmuel Vigoda and Leibler Glantz. So please stay tuned. And to remind you that this program is also repeated on Sunday morning just after 9 a.m. So, Chad, let's continue now talking about the anti-apartheid movement, the civil rights movement. Can you name me some of the leaders of the Jewish community who were involved in that movement against the civil, for civil rights?
Absolutely. So, more specifically, we're looking into Atlanta. So, you had Rabbi Rothschild in Atlanta, Georgia, who was specifically speaking out against apartheid, and he's one of the guys we're looking very specifically into. I've actually spoken to to an individual, Mark Bauman, who's a prominent leader of Southern Jewish history, retelling the story. He's also his biographer, so we've been in contact quite a bit, and he's gonna help me out. But the research really is sort of in its beginning stages, so we're sort of sorting through archives now, taking down what we can, sifting through documents, and sort of extracting what we can that would be helpful towards our research project.
Right. And was he a Reform or Orthodox?
So it's interesting. The synagogue that he was under at the time was considered an Orthodox synagogue from what I believe, but now it's sort of taken a turn towards Reform Judaism.
Oh, right. And what were there any leading Orthodox rabbis involved in the civil rights movement?
So there was also Rabbi Emanuel Feldman at the Beth Jacob Shul.
Oh, yes. Emanuel Feldman is a household name.
Yes.
He's been there for 50 years when he was a rabbi.
Absolutely. So he's actually signed on to a few documents that would sort of be publicized to the community that sort of garnered interest to integrate society as well. So you could see sort of this partnership between some of the Reform and Orthodox rabbis, specifically Rabbi Feldman and Rabbi Rothschild, that talked about and publicized interest to promote this integration movement in the South.
You know, I'm going to mention something about Rabbi Feldman, which I don't think any of our listeners may know. Very few, if any. When Louis Rabinowitz retired as chief rabbi of South Africa in 1961, Rabbi Emanuel Feldman was offered the chief rabbinate here in Johannesburg.
I didn't even know that.
And he turned it down. He turned it down. I know this for a fact because I happened to be very involved in that when they were appointing a chief rabbi.
Wow.
That was Emanuel Feldman. Have you got any of his books?
I've seen some of them in the library over at his shul. I don't go to the shul that he was the rabbi at, but some of my rebbeim at Yeshiva University have mentioned some of his books as well. So he's quite a well-known figure.
Very well-known and very, very forceful speaker as well.
Yes.
Very well. Well, well known. Right, so that was Emmanuel Feldman. And what about religious leaders who were involved? Like, there was one particular one I won't mention. Let's see if you can remember, who was involved with the ZOA. I'm sure you know what ZOA is. Zionist Organization of America.
That's right.
Let's see if anybody of our listeners will remember. His surname begins with an F, if you do remember.
Wasn't Finkelstein?
No. Let's think about it. Okay, we'll continue in a few moments.
Okay.
Very well known as the World Zionist Organization as well. He was on the World Zionist Organization as well. Came to Israel many times. I met him quite a few times at congresses. Very involved. Then, of course, there was another Reformed rabbi, but involved a bit later on. I don't know if you heard of Martin Wise. Have you ever heard of Rabbi Martin Wise?
I don't believe so. I don't think so.
No, Martin Wise was very involved in 1948 with the establishment of the State of Israel. He spoke. You know, the Reform movement were against the establishment of the State of Israel, but they managed. Martin Wise was one of the few who came out and supported it. So was another one, Rabbi Abba Hillel Silver. Did you hear
of him? I've heard of him before.
Yeah.
I've seen his name on quite a few documents that I've sifted through.
Right. So I'm going to put it out to our listeners. How many of our listeners know who that famous non-religious leader was who supported the civil rights movement? He was also very involved with ZOA, that's the Zionist Organization of America, and the World Organization, as well as the Jewish Agency. If you do know, you can text us on 34519, and we wait to hear from you. And if there's any questions you want to put out to Chad, you can please text us, as I said, 34519, or you can call us on 0746 54735. We're taking a break. We're back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
So I'm talking to Chad Shapiro from Atlanta, USA, and of course he's studying at the Yeshiva University, and he's doing a thesis on anti-apartheid, the Jewish organizations and the individuals. But now tell us about the Yeshiva University from a different aspect. We're not talking political. Limda Kodesh, what a day would be, and who your Rosh Yeshiva is.
Sure, absolutely, I'd love to. So the Rosh Yeshiva at Yeshiva University, so there are a few, but the main man in charge is Rabbi Herschel Schachter, and I guess I can just give you a rundown of how the day works from a student at Yeshiva University. So all the undergraduate males have to be enrolled in some sort of a Judaic program in the morning. So there are four tracks for Judaic programs, sort of catering to the different needs and interests of all the different students. So you have some guys who want to sit and learn in the Beit Midrash every morning. They want to learn Gemara. So we have one track that caters to that need. So that lasts from about 9 in the morning till 2:30 in the afternoon with a lunch break. And then you have some of the guys who want to be learning both in the Beit Midrash and sort of have this classroom environment as well. So there's another track that does that particularly. And then you have another track where the guys just want to be learning in a classroom. They have different classes on a wide variety of Jewish topics, from Tanakh to Gemara to theology to philosophy. So there are many people enrolled in that program as well. And then you also have some of the men who have never actually been exposed to Limudei Kodesh before. They're coming fresh to Yeshiva University with a thirst for Torah. So we have another track that caters to that need as well. So that's in the morning. And then in the afternoon, the guys sort of go they part their ways, and they go and study whatever their majors are, with the classes that they need to take care of before they graduate. So that takes up the afternoon period as well. So the days are quite long with a dual curriculum. They can last up until 10 at night if you're one of the pre-med guys having to take labs late at night. So it's a long, strenuous day, but it's quite rewarding at the end of the day.
Right. You know that, of course, the Rosh Yeshiva that I remember was, of course, Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik. And I asked Chad if he remembers. Rabbi Soloveitchik, by the way, wrote a book called The Lonely Man of Faith. And I asked him, do you know why he wrote that book? And Chad says, no, you don't know.
Well, I thought it had to do with the content of the book itself sort of speaks to the title, but maybe there's a story behind it that I'm not quite aware of.
I tell it was. Within 3 months, Rabbi Soloveitchik lost his mother, his wife, and his sister.
Hmm.
In 3 months, he lost 3 members of his family, and that's why I wrote the book, The Lonely Man of Faith. But Soloveitchik's other books are all used throughout the B'nai Akiva world, the Mizrahi world. They all use him, and they all also quote him. And of course, he had a brother living in Chicago, Aaron Soloveitchik. I remember him very well because he was in a wheelchair. I don't know if you ever saw him or met him.
I never got to meet him.
No. We're taking an ad break. We're back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back, 20 minutes to 10. So we're talking to Chad about the Yeshiva experience, Yeshiva universities. Of course, I'm sure many of our listeners know the Yeshiva was originally founded and was named after Rabbi Elchanan Spector. Mm-hmm. Now, I asked Chad if there's any South Africans that he knows there at present, and he mentioned there's Ariel Brom. I'm sure many of you know his father, Brian Brom. And there were some other South Africans there. There was Alan Miller, that's the grandson of, who's married to the late Rabbi Norman Bernard's granddaughter. And by the way, Rabbi Norman Bernard, he went to Yeshiva University as well. And of course, I remember a chap called Yitzhak Trump. I'm sure you may not know, but I think he's already graduated and gone on. His late father, Martin Trump, was no relation to the President of the United States, was a lecturer in English at Wits University. So what other, and of course there's the famous Bells Conservatoire at Yeshiva University, which is where you can learn Chazonis and Jewish music, and the dean of students there is Chazan Yosef Malavani. I'm sure many of you remember. He was the Chazan at the Yovel Shul. He succeeded Chazan Philip Badash when he went to Cape Town, and I often play his Chazonis CDs on my program, The Art of the Cantor, on a Sunday afternoon. And Yosef Malavani, a few weeks ago, was honored as the first Chazan ever to get the prestigious award of the Jewish Community Leader in the United States. The first Chazan ever to get that award. He's also Dean of Music at one of the universities in Europe. He travels extensively with his wife Beatrice. And I hope if he's listening in, otherwise I'll send him an email and tell him to do a podcast. As I mentioned earlier, this program is available on podcast. It'll be on from about Tuesday morning. All you do is go to www.chaifm.com. You go down to the Reflections of the Past, today's date, and you can download it. And it's also repeated this coming Sunday, just after 9 a.m. Now, are there any extramural activities at Yeshiva University?
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking just like the extracurricular activities?
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. So there are lots of different sports teams as well. I actually played for the baseball team for a semester. I'm a big baseball fan. I love playing the sport. So I took part on that team as well. So the guys love doing sports. It's challenging. It's demanding. And it's a Division III sports team. And what people don't know what that means. It's a proper collegiate level sports at Yeshiva University, so it's quite competitive and it's challenging, and it takes up a lot more of the day than just the dual curriculum, so it's very, very challenging and difficult. There are also many different clubs that the men and women take part in as well. It's quite nice when you have a small student body and you're able to have a large voice and a large say at the school. So a lot of the men and women like to take their interests and and sort of morph them into a club where people can also participate and they can sort of put something nice together as well. So there are quite a few extracurricular activities in addition to just the curriculum at Yeshiva University.
Are there things like debating societies?
Yeah, there's debating society as well. I believe there is a debate club at Yeshiva University. I'm not quite sure. Any Yeshiva University listeners are listening right now, maybe they can help me out on that.
Right. And what are other activities? For example, do they teach, like in London you used to have what they call Jews College, and they, when you were studying there, they would teach you how to prepare a drosha, how to speak. Have they that in, and the other side as well, to do counseling, to visiting the sick and the terminally ill, and God forbid you go to a shiva house.
Absolutely. So I'll, the first question first. So, there, within the smicha program, there's actually a smicha program as well, at Yeshiva University. And one of the tracks from some of the guys who I've spoken to in doing the smicha program there, there is a track for people who want to go on to community rabbi. So there are public speaking courses as well, specifically for Judaic studies. So that would be, I guess, that track that you're speaking of. There are also public speaking classes for secular studies as well, of course, for business and for whatever other professions that sort of need that skill involved.
Right, and for, you say the smicha course, because as I said, that the Jews College in London, that it would even teach you how to do counseling, for example, as I said, visiting the ill, the terminally ill, or going to a shiva house, how to speak to them, because, you know, sometimes you just don't walk in and straight to the point and say, talking about things that don't affect the family or anything like that at all. So do they teach that? Is there a course for that?
Yeah, so I'm not sure if there is a course for that. I'm sure it's sort of taught within the smicha program as well, and within just the ethos of YU is not just to provide a Torah education, but it's also to sort of promote a sensitivity and a well-rounded Jewish education that also involves, of course, Derech Eretz and being sensitive to your fellow Jew and to just the world in general. So it's not just a place where we can sit and learn, but learning should also provide a springboard and always be taught within this environment of gemilut chasadim, right, of doing chesed and going out into the world and sort of repairing the world.
Right. Tell me, who is the president at the moment of the Yeshiva University?
So there's just been a transition period right now from President Richard Joel, who served as a president for quite a while, and now we have Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman beginning his term as well as president of the school.
So I remember Dr. Norman Lamb. I'm sure the name will ring a bell to many of the listeners. Norman Lamb, he's got a brother called Morris Lamb. Remember, he wrote a book, The Jewish Way of Death in Mourning. And as a matter of fact, Norman Lamb visited South Africa in the 1960s or 70s when he came to Johannesburg. He actually spoke at the Berea Shul when the late Rabbi Alloy was there as well. Of course, he was synonymous with the Yeshiva University, the name Lamb. So, as you say, that's the extramural activities. Do you have any interaction, reaction or action with the other religions other than like with the Christian religion or the Jewish University? Because the Jews College used to have a program where they would get the different denominations together speaking in an exchange program.
I'm not sure. I don't have much knowledge talking about the interfaith interactions between Yeshiva University and the other institutions. I want to say, though, that we also have partnership programs with programs in Israel as well. And I believe one of my friends who went on one of these trips in the summer to Israel as a part of Yeshiva University's team had a dialogue with some of the Muslim counterparts in Israel as well. So maybe within that realm there is some sort of interfaith dialogue, but maybe some of the other Yeshiva University students who are sort of more involved with that aspect could better answer that question.
While we were talking, you mentioned about the men, and there's a separate section for the women.
That's right.
Now, is it on? It's not on the same campus, is it?
No. So the boys' campus, the men's campus, is located in Washington Heights, New York, which is Uptown Manhattan. We are located on 186th Street in Manhattan, which is right above Harlem. And the women's campus is right in the heart of the city on 34th Street and Lexington Avenue.
Washington Heights.
Yes.
And that's where you have that that Yekev Shul, the Adash Shul, and the very
yes, that's
that
right.
Was Rabbi Breuer.
Yeah, that's right.
The Breuers.
Exactly.
The Breuers there. Of course, we have a rabbi here in South Africa, Rabbi Schnurb, Moshe Schnurb, and his father, who comes here whenever there's a simcha, he is a member of the Washington Night Shul, and I happen to be there. And of course, it's named after the famous rabbi. Do you know who the one who came from Frankfurt on Main? Breuer was the son-in-law of that famous rabbi.
Rabbi Mordechai?
No. Shimshon Raphael Hirsch.
Oh, of course.
Washington Heights. We're taking a break. We're back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
10 minutes to 10. Just to remind you that Shabbat comes in at 5:31. Motzei Shabbat 6:22, Parsha Ra'eh. Tomorrow is Shabbat Mavorachim. We're going to bench Rosh Chodesh for Rosh Chodesh, which takes place on Tuesday and Wednesday, and it's for the month of Elul. By the way, let's see, what is the meaning of the word a palindrome? Because Elul means what, if you do know?
Ah, so Anila Dodiva Dodili.
Dodili. You can spell it backwards or forwards.
That's right.
Very good. Now, tell me, Chad, what do you see as your future? Are you going to do a Simicha program, or what do you intend doing?
So, of course, I am considering strongly doing the Smicha program at Yeshiva University. And in terms of secular studies, I plan on hopefully attending law school in 2 years' time. That's the plan. I still have a year and a half left as an undergraduate student at Yeshiva University, and law school is right now the prominent track that I'm pursuing.
Right. And you have siblings, and what do they do?
So my brother Greg, he is 19 years old. He's just finished up a year in yeshiva in Israel at Yeshivat Oraita in the old city of Jerusalem. And now he is planning on attending Yeshiva University with me. So it'll be interesting to have my brother there with me. I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And your sister?
And my sister, Shana, is 14 years old, and she has just this week begun her high school career. So
oh, very nice.
She's very excited about that, too.
Right. Excellent. Yeah. Very excellent. Tell me, just to get back to Yeshiva University, do they have classes there for Hebrew? Just only teaching
yes,
Hebrew?
Yes, of course. So it's actually a required track. You have to take, depending on the level that you take, the top two levels have to take 2 semesters of Hebrew, and then
right.
the bottom two levels have to take 3 semesters of Hebrew, I believe, unless it's changed recently. But I had to take 2 semesters of Hebrew. There are actually some of the most challenging classes I've taken at Yeshiva University. They do not make it easy at all, and you do learn a lot about grammar and conversational Hebrew. At the end of the day, I guess the goal is to be able to not just hold a conversation in Hebrew, but to even understand a Hebrew newspaper. And they want you to be quite proficient in
that's
Hebrew.
That's very good.
Yeah.
Tell me, your parents, are they involved in the Jewish community in Atlanta?
Absolutely. So we attend a shul called Chabad of North Fulton in a suburb of Atlanta called Alpharetta, Georgia. My father has been the gabbai there for many years, and my mother is the head of the Kiddush committee as well, and she also tends to, we have a women's mikveh and a men's mikveh in the community, so my mom tends to the mikveh needs for the women as well. So my parents are quite involved and have been for quite a few years.
As an offside, you said that your mother is in charge of the Kiddush Committee.
Yes.
Well, you know what they used to call them here in South Africa? It was the Federation of Synagogues Women's Guild, but they used to call the ladies the Kichel and Herring Brigade. But today, most of the shuls, I would say, don't do that anymore. They have outside caterers or inside, you know, come in and prepare the Kiddush.
Right.
Here we call it a brocha
right.
on a Shabbos morning. Mm-hmm. Right. So, Chad, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in the studio. I want to wish you lots of hatzlocha and brocha for the future, but I hope to see you in the next couple of days, and I'm going to give you quite a lot of information from my own archives, because I was very, very involved in politics from the very early age. When I go back, I say an early age, from the age of about 9,
wow.
I was involved and always fought against the government, anti-apartheid. I was very, very involved there, and I'll talk about some of the people that I was involved with, the late Harry Schwartz, who was a ambassador to the United Nations, South African ambassador, but he never ever joined or supported the Nationalist Party, but they appointed him because of his experience and his expertise. There was the late Bertha Solomon, a member of parliament. There was Helen Suzman. There was Ellen Hellman. I can mention dozens of people. So I want to just wish you Hatzlocha and Brocha, to have a wonderful Shabbat. We'll be speaking to you afterwards, and to thank Craig for controlling. Just to remind you again, Sunday afternoon, the Art of the Cantor between 4 and 5. Tuesday morning, Talk of the Town, where we'll be having, please God, Bizrat Hashem, Rabbi Benny Isaacson talking, because they're about to launch his new book, his biography, autobiography, and also Reflections of the Past next Friday morning between 9 and 10. So go well, everyone. Have a wonderful Shabbat. Dress warm. It's cold. Have a wonderful weekend, and thanks for listening.